In September 2014, four men staged a daylight robbery in Glasgow's Argyll Arcade. Armed with axes, they burst into the arcade and stole £250,000 worth of high-end watches. They were later caught and sentenced to a total of 40 years. But it wasn't the first robbery having taken place in the Argyll Arcade. Over 160 years earlier, in 1848, another took place. This was an audacious jewel robbery which left everyone perplexed, as no one could work out how it was perpetrated. This was a real Victorian locked door mystery. Hi, and welcome back to the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. Sorry it's been so long, but I've been trying to get some YouTube channels up on the go. One called Sherlock's London. If that sounds interesting to you, have a little search on YouTube, like and subscribe to it. I've even been turning some of my podcast episodes into YouTube videos. If you fancy listening and watching the pub episodes, you'll find them on there, with the actual pictures of the pubs. But anyway, back to my first love. I've been reading a book of historical crimes in Glasgow, and it's thanks to Malcolm Archibald and his book, Glasgow, The Real Mean City, for the source material for today's gem of a story, and one I had never heard of. But before today's story, let's look at crime fiction. In crime fiction, there's a subgenre called the locked room mystery. In this genre, the crime is committed in circumstances under which it seems impossible for the perpetrator to commit the crime, evade detection in getting in and out of the crime scene. And when we look at famous locked room mysteries in fiction, we can probably start with my old favourite, Sherlock, and the 1903 short story which saw the return of Sherlock from the dead. This was The Adventure of the Empty House. Other classics include Edgar Allan Poe's Murder in the Rue Morgue, Ellery Queen's The Chinese Orange Mystery, and John Dixon Carr's magnificent 1935 novel, The Hollow Man. As entertaining as crime fiction might be, especially to a literary velociraptor as myself, there really is no substitute for real true crime stories. So, let's head back to my home city of Glasgow, and indeed, let's go back to 1848. We're in the 11th year of Queen Victoria's reign. It's the year the California Gold Rush starts, and the birth of one of Wild West's most famous figures, Wyatt Earp, and more about him in a forthcoming Wild West trilogy. By Victorian times, Glasgow was known as the second city of the Empire. This was due to it being a main trade route to North America and the Caribbean, and also because of its shipbuilding industry. Glasgow, although hosting settlements and Roman outposts for millennia, was founded by St Mungo in the 6th century. With it being divided in two by the River Clyde, it grew steadily larger over the centuries, and we see Glasgow Fair, first in 1190, and the University of Glasgow, founded in 1451. By the time Defoe visits the city in the 18th century, he describes it as the best built in Britain, London excepted. But Glasgow's success goes hand in hand with its shameful part in history, which has the city's tobacco lords in 1668 creating a deep water port. This was to accommodate half of Britain's tobacco, cotton, and sugar trade. Glasgow became one of the first cities in Europe to reach 1 million population mark. With rebuilding in the 19th century, much of central Glasgow's architecture is Victorian in nature, and other cities copied the style, and to this end, the city centre of Glasgow was even used to depict Philadelphia in the 2013 film World War Z with Brad Pitt. In the late 1950s, Glasgow saw one of the biggest architectural culls and redevelopments in history, with 130,000 houses torn down and most of this populace relocated in newly built estates in the peripheries of the city. But right in the centre of Glasgow, we find the Argyll Arcade. This is an L-shaped row of 30 jewellery shops. It was built in 1827 by Glaswegian John Baird, and it was influenced by French style with a glass roof which allows light to permeate throughout the arcade. Since it's been built, it's seen many of Glasgow's females drag their boyfriends up and down in search of the perfect ring, but luckily not the narrator of today's tale. The arcade has also seen the envious eyes of many jewel thieves pacing the Aladdin's cave of treasures and dreaming up schemes. The arcade has two entrances, one on the Argyll Street side and a Buchanan Street entrance. In 1848, these gates were locked at night, with the duty policeman checking they were both secure each time he passed his beat during the night. Additionally, the arcade had a security guard inside the arcade who made regular checks to make sure the interior was intact during the night. The arcade gates opened at 6 a.m. and the night watchman finished his shift at 7 a.m. By this time, the arcade would be full of people on the way to work and window shopping. And so, on the evening of Thursday the 18th of May, 1848, upon closing, John Duncan's shop in the arcade was locked up securely. On the Friday morning, however, upon arriving, the shop boy, Andrew Gray, unlocked his shop at 8 a.m. and he was stunned. The shop had been looted between the time of locking up and arrival, and it had clearly been done quite patiently and selectively. Moreover, neither of the shop's two doors appeared forced and were locked. An itinerary showed the thieves had got away with over 50 gold and silver watches, a large number of gold chains and rings, and a selection of silver pencil cases. The haul amounted to around £700, or around £95,000 in today's money. The police's initial inquiries, of course, led to suspicions on the watchman, but he was deemed to be of honest and good character. And with that, despite a media frenzy, the trail didn't lead anywhere. Pawn shops and jewellers were all carefully watched and told to be on the lookout for missing items, but none turned up. John Duncan even had 200 posters put up around Glasgow with a £50 reward, but to no effect. It was speculated John Duncan had committed the crime for insurance money, and indeed, it was further speculated there was no crime whatsoever, and it was all a fabrication. And so, for a year, the case went cold, until the most curious coincidence led police on a breadcrumb trail, such as in the fairy tale Hansel and Gretel. And it started as thus. 10 months after the robbery, on the 17th of March, 1849, John Duncan was in his shop in the arcade when a man came into the shop asking for an Albert chain and key for his silver watch. When looking at the watch, Duncan recognised it as one of the stolen watches and he immediately summoned the police. And Inspector George Mackay, Glasgow's lead detective, took the case. The man's name was William Priestley, and he told Mackay he'd purchased the watch from John Dougal's shop in Brunswick Street, not far from the arcade. And inquiries at John Dougal's shop told Inspector Mackay that he had purchased 20 watches from a Henry Gray, a gold beater, in Dunlop Street, again, just streets away from the arcade. When Gray was questioned, he initially claimed to have bought these watches in a pub in Dalmarnock Road from a stranger. He subsequently changed this story when arrested and admitted he knew the man from whom he had bought the watches. This in turn led Mackay to Alexander Stewart, a blacksmith and metal worker of King Street, yet again within approximately 800 metres of the arcade. From Gray, Inspector Mackay also found that a man called Archibald Leach had tried to reset some jewels. And Mackay's detective instincts told him he was now getting close to his goal and decided to check known associates or criminal connections of the blacksmith Stewart. And inquiries led to a Mrs. Walker who keeps a thief's den in Stockwell Street. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you how close Stockwell Street is to the arcade. His first port of call was Mrs. Walker's home, where Mackay turned up a small leather case, which he found some of the stolen jewellery. Lawrence Anderson in Oxford Street was Stuart's brother-in-law, and a search of his property then turned up more stolen jewellery. And like any good mafia-esque story, Anderson was turned and used as witness for Mackay's case. Blacksmith Stewart was arrested in a pub with his wife Isabella, and more of the stolen jewellery was found in her home. Witnesses also came forward to state that Stewart had hawked around watches in a basket in a local pub. Archibald Leach was found in a pub in the Trongate and escorted to his shop, made to open his safe, and a parcel was found. The parcel contained 17 watches. Only 9 of these watches belonged to Leach and the others stolen. Luckily, John Duncan had made a note of the serial numbers on his watches. Mackay then took the unusual step, taking Leach for a drink, and over some whiskey, the pieces of the jigsaw slowly revealed itself. Alexander Stewart, the blacksmith, had worked with a man named Liddell, an ironmonger, who did work for most of the shops in the arcade. Whilst doing work for John Duncan, Stewart had access to his key and quickly made an imprint on putty with these keys, and he later duplicated them. He then spent months planning his perfect robbery. The shops in the arcade shut a short time before the arcade closed, and thus, when Duncan's shop was locked and the employee left for the night, on the night of the 18th of May, 1848, Stewart slipped inside the arcade just before the outer gates were locked. He waited until the elbow of the arcade prevented the watchman from seeing him, and he used his false key to get into Duncan's shop. He was therefore inside the shop when the watchman came to lock the Argyle Street entrance and watched quietly in the dark as the watchman went back to his nighttime position, with only the occasional walk to check that everything was secure. Stewart had converted a lantern to show just a thin pencil of light, enough for him to thoroughly ransack a shop and only take the goods he believed he could dispose of. And that was the robbery. And now for the escape. At 6 a.m, when the gates opened, the watchman watched the first person enter. This was a woman with a mop who proceeded to clean. The woman continued to monitor the watchman, and when he was out of sight, she tapped the window of Duncan's shop. Alexander Stewart quickly came out of the shop, popped a parcel into the cleaners, or should we say, his wife Isabella's bucket, which was swiftly covered by a cloth. Alexander Stewart then made a swift escape from the exit, unguarded. Mackay cast a wide net and arrested 5 people for the theft, or for resetting the watches, as well as the Stuarts. There was Gray, Lawrence Anderson, and the general dealer, Archibald Leach. Anderson had been released, but in his place came a dealer named James Dobby. Mackay was not yet finished. He questioned the suspects one by one and found out that more of the stolen jewellery was scattered around West Central Scotland, where the police gradually made a collection of most of the items. In September 1849, the case came to trial in court. The Stuarts were charged with breaking into Duncan's shop by means of a false key or lockpick and stealing a large quantity of items, including 63 watches, 216 rings, 90 pencil cases, and 90 gold watch chains. These were accumulated crimes over and above the Argyll Arcade robbery. Isabella Stuart was also charged with resetting the stolen goods. Leach charged with resetting 8 watches, Gray with resetting 20 watches, and Dobby with resetting 26 rings. Gray and Dobby absconded before the trial and were consequently outlawed, while a clerical error saw Leach temporarily walk free. The Stuarts were sentenced to 14 years transportation and sent to Australia. And a month later, Leach hadn't changed his ways despite his previous good fortune. He was back for trial, charged with resetting watches in the Crow Hotel in George Square and in John Robertson's chemist shop in Queen Street. After a trial where his defence depended on his previous good character, Leach was found guilty and given 8 months. When everything was done and dusted, Duncan was immensely relieved. He did not recover all of his stolen goods, only 5 of the 30 gold watches and 14 of the silver, so he was down about £400. But that mattered less than having his good reputation restored. The slurs that he'd staged the whole robbery were far worse to him than the loss of a few watches. And that, my good listeners, was a real-life locked door mystery. I hope you enjoyed it. And till next time, bye-bye.